This episode of An Abundance of Not is brought to you by Amazon.com. Amazon affiliated with us. We're very happy about it. Please go to anabundanceofnot.com, click on the Amazon banner, and do all your shopping as normal. Bookmark for ease of use. We appreciate it.
And TLDRGamer.com. When you don't have a whole lot of time to read the gaming news and just want the brief excerpts, visit TLDRGamer.com. for the core info. Thank you to them for the hosting and bandwidth for our podcast. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome in. It's Abundance of Not, Garrett, Brad, and Wade. We think Wade is kind of drunk.
No, I'm not.
Oh. And it's April 23.
And it's a Wednesday.
It is a Wednesday.
Not like last week's Tuesday.
My Friday.
That's right.
Well, it's Friday.
Well, so by way of explanation and apology, so last week's recording was early, but we have been having problems with the website feed. So if you have been checking our website, you have probably listened to the podcast already. If you have been relying on iTunes, you may not have even heard last week's podcast by the time you're listening to this one.
That is correct. We have been trying different software attachments and whatnot to the website. And
somebody messed it up.
It was not my fault.
I didn't say any names, did I?
Okay, so it was your fault. Fantastic. Brad takes the blame. we've been having some issues, been trying to find ways. As you may know, we are expanding our shows, and we wanted to make sure that all shows were easy to get to, which provoked some changes, growing pains, as you will.
But yep. Everything is hopefully all well and good
happened.
Now.
Yeah, that happened. So hopefully tomorrow, and or when you are listening to this, it was seamless, and we apologize.
With that out of the way, how was your weekend?
That's done. How was my weekend? What did I do this weekend? Let's see.
You mean your 4-day?
Oh, yeah, I had a 4-day weekend, huh?
Yeah.
So let's see, starting the 4-day.
I was going to be very upset if you came back and said you did nothing. You had 4 days off.
Yep, you did.
I mostly did nothing. Well, I started by spending 3 hours in the dentist parking lot waiting for someone to get done with his dentist appointment that took way too freaking long.
Wrong, sir. You first spent most of the time playing Diablo 3.
No, not really on Saturday. We only played a couple hours because your dentist appointment was at 10.
But your weekend didn't start on Saturday. Your weekend started on Thursday.
I meant Thursday.
This is Yes, we did start on Thursday.
Wade's appointment was Thursday at 10 o'clock. We played Diablo 3 a bit in the morning, and then we had to, get up and go. And daughter and I went over to the mall. She got a new Lego. We got some Wetzel's pretzels, and then we waited for Wade in the parking lot for 3 hours. What did we do for the rest of the day? We didn't really do much, huh? We played Diablo.
The next day we went to the beach, I think.
And Thursday I was working on podcast stuff, getting the videos posted to YouTube. Friday we went down to Laguna Beach. I've got a couple small videos that I recorded with the GoPro. I'm toying around with how I want to get those. If I'm going to publish those, or if they're just going to be keepsakes with the kid. That was Friday. Saturday, not a whole lot happened Saturday. Some errands, whatnot, all that fun and exciting stuff. Easter Sunday.
Never ending.
Never ending, right? God, it's such torment. Sunday we went and saw Rio 2, so we'll talk about that in the movie segment with on Easter. And had a mildly relaxing time. That sums it up. Oh, and I played pool Monday night, and I don't want to talk about it. Okay, great. Moving on.
So now we know how that turned out. Wade?
Yes. Yep. Well, like they said, they were waiting, or he said they were waiting for someone in the dentist chair, that someone being me. It was probably the most painful appointment yet. So that was fun.
Is it the final one, the big one, that's all over and done? Or
No. The top jaw is done and set. Have a temporary on the lower left. and that will be replaced by a bridge, and then they will begin work on the lower right, which will then be finally done when it's replaced by the partial.
Alrighty then.
Yeah, that's the job reconstruction of this program.
with that done, moving on.
Yeah. So, like I said, they waited. I got poked and prodded at. Then went around and ran errands the following day. Spent playing, or most of the morning playing video games with the kid. And hitting Laguna Beach. Then picking up the mother's car from the body repair shop.
Yes, we did do that.
But hey, cool. I actually did something this weekend.
actually, funny story with the car in the body shop. We dropped the car off Wednesday. I apparently had left my wallet there. So Thursday morning, we went to pick up my wallet. And then Friday, we were there back again to get the car. So they were kind of sick of seeing us. That's my funny story.
Yeah, but as long as you pay them, I mean.
Yeah, we actually got a return customer discount.
Yeah, we did. I mean, the car's been in that shop three times since, like, I don't know, December-ish, January. So.
That's pretty sad when you get a frequent shopper discount at the body shop.
At the body shop, yep.
But in a returning event, the dentist called me to drop in at 3. I just decided to after work just to head straight there and get the final impression for the lower left side. So that'll be the bridge. So next appointment is in the 29th. And yeah, hope to have even better news for that then.
I hope so.
Yeah. So how was your weekend, Mr. Bradley?
My weekend was fairly quiet. We didn't do a whole lot. Sunday, I guess it was. The area that we live in has done some walking trails, paved walking trails down by the river. So we did, about 3 miles of walking Sunday. The kids rode their various wheeled contraptions.
Paved? God, where's the fun in that?
Yeah, I saw something about, kid mastering the two-wheeled skateboard.
Well, and it's not just two wheels. There's I don't know if you guys have seen the wiggle boards.
Oh, I think I know what it is, yeah.
So it's the skateboard is in two sections, and there's only one wheel on each section, and then they're joined together in such a way that the front sections? And back sections pivot side to side from each other.
Yes.
Yeah, so he can ride this for,
miles.
We're talking thousands of feet at a time, maybe a mile at once.
Well, there's
any time.
Not to cut you off, but there's a guy I met. He was founding this company, and he took that concept and he developed essentially skates with that concept. So they're individual pieces. They have two wheels that are in line on each piece, so you stand on them independently. But you move your feet the kind of same snake toe-in, toe-out type of movement that you do with the wiggle board. And it generates the same motion, the same movement, the same propulsion that way. But instead of a joined single piece, it's two independent parts. I picked up a pair because I thought they were awesome. But I have not mastered this particular contraption.
I see those things as a good way to break your ankle. The wiggle board, all right, you got some stability. Those things are like, guess what? Ankle broken.
Yeah, I don't even know what they're called. I've got them in the closet somewhere.
They're called the ankle breakers.
There's no stability on that either. I mean, of the four in the family, I guess I probably have the best balance, and he has one of the worst, and he can do that thing for, a really long time, and any time I've tried to stand on it, Yeah, it doesn't work so well.
Well, it's kind of like that whole concept of, a bicycle stationary is extremely unstable. But once you get the gyros of the wheels going, the the forward momentum going, that becomes remarkably stable. And I think it's kind of the same
Very
way.
True.
It's just figuring out the methodology of getting to that point.
Getting that motion going. I mean, he's mastered it to the point where there were a couple of sections on the trail where I guess the natural fall of the ground, you know, made it impossible to pave, and they ended up putting in a boardwalk section.
Yeah, I can see how that would be a problem.
No, he can ride it over that too.
Oh yeah, the nice thing with the skate ones that I have, that I, if I ever, you know, do figure out how to make them go, is they are very compact. You could throw them in a backpack. You can do, you know, so they're great from that standpoint. If I could ever, you know, just figure it out, assuming I still
practice,
have them.
Apparently.
Yeah,
practice makes perfect, is what I've heard.
Were they in that storage box in the?
But I don't think I got rid of them. I think I paid too much for them, so I'm pretty sure I kept them.
Storage box in the garage? Probably.
Somewhere. Anyway, back to your weekend, Brad. Sorry for the plug.
So, between that and then the kids had soccer, indoor soccer again, which, yeah, drove us nuts again. Not quite as bad this week, but still...
Why did it drive you nuts?
Like we've discussed before, you know, the whole everybody gets to play equally, everybody wins, everybody's a champion. Maybe, but on the bright side, it does make our younger play better, because during practice, there's one particular kid that we've discussed before on his team that is just shouldn't be playing. And... our younger kid is very, very, very competitive. So anytime he's paired up with or against this kid to practice, it just kind of pisses him off and makes him play incredibly well.
That's great.
It's that anger-provoked focus that it causes adrenaline and all that kind of good stuff.
Pretty much. So they spend the entire 30 minutes, you know, practice time just getting him worked up and pissed off, and then they turn him loose on the other team. And
Jim, you play with John.
And the thing about it is, where his birthday falls, he could either be ahead a year or behind a year.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those awkward birthdays as far as the school year goes.
Definitely.
So we deliberately kept him back, you know, started him a little later so he could, you know, develop a little more. So that means he is big for his class.
Sure.
So you're saying he's a school bully?
Well, we're talking about the other kids on the other team, maybe come up to his shoulder.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now you have a pissed off kid that's, you know, a head height above you.
Yeah. There's no intimidation factor there.
Yeah, so, I mean, when they put him in as goalie, there are times when, you know, he can stop a ball and then drop kick it clear to the other end of the field and almost make it in the other goal.
Sure.
Nice.
So, yeah, that was our weekend.
Very cool, very cool. Well, I guess it's time for... Mm-hmm. So in the movies this week coming out, we have our good friend, as we know as Jaime Lannister, Nikolai Cadwalader, and The Other Woman, co-starring alongside Cameron Diaz, Leslie Mann, and Kate Upton. This looks pretty hilarious. It's only got a 39% critic rating, but it's all about... cheating man, and he's just playing the field for all intents and purposes, and the women get together and, you know, pretty much put him back in his place. Also coming out is a movie called Brick Mansions. This is with Paul Walker and David Bell. You may not necessarily know the name David Bell, but he is one of the more or less founders of free running. He was in a few movies. I believe he's French. He was in a few movies that were dubbed District 13, then District 14, translated over, but focuses on the free-running aspects. This particular movie is that at least Paul Walker is a cop in what appears to be rundown Detroit, going after a crime mob, crime boss, for vengeance or just general legality purposes. No critic rating on that. Finally is The Quiet Ones. This is a horror movie. 50% critic rating. It's only PG-13. I don't know much more about it than that, because horror movies aren't my thing.
Sounds like I have something to do.
That's right.
When does that come out?
We're talking about it this week. So that would lead us to believe
what
that
day?
It,
thank you.
Friday.
It technically dropped Friday.
Thank you.
Okay. Great. In the box office, Captain America takes first again at $25.6 million, getting very, very close to earning its budget back domestically. Heaven is for Real came in number two at 22.5, Rio 2 at 22.2, and Transcendence at 10.9. From an honorable mention standpoint, we have Bears brought in $4.8 million, and I believe the other one was The Haunted Mansion 2, which brought in $8.8 million. So that's that for...
The Haunted Mansion? Was that the first one with Eddie Murphy, wasn't it?
This is Haunted House 2. This is Marlon Wayans, Jamie Presley, kind of a horror comedy type thing. That came in
still
as an honorable mention.
It's because I was thinking, like, Haunted Mansion, that really wasn't that good of a movie to warrant a second one.
It really wasn't, no. And the first one of this probably wasn't worth making a second one either. But they did it anyway. Like we talked about earlier, we went and saw Rio 2 on Sunday. Wade, do you want to let us know your thoughts, feelings, emotional ties, and all-around reactions?
So... We covered this one. Was this last week we covered this one?
No. Well, it came out last week. We went and saw it on Easter Sunday.
Right, but we went and saw it and covered it. So how did it compare to?
Oh, I forgot that you guys saw it.
No problem.
No, we enjoyed it. I mean, nice little message going on, and liked a lot of the names. And I didn't realize Kristen Chenoweth was in it, doing the voice of the not-so-toxic pink tree frog. So all I can think of is trying to picture her at the microphone doing the voiceovers, because some actors can be very stationary doing it, and some of them have to be acting to... get all the inflections and whatnot they need. So I kept trying to picture that, which was kind of funny.
Yeah, you remember, you played the game Heavenly Sword, right?
Yes.
Okay, the guy, it's not the Crow King, but the King of the Humans or whatever it was.
Okay.
The guy actually sat there and did the performance while narrating it.
Just sitting there.
With the motion capture suit on. It was pretty crazy.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So it's the same system.
Sort of. Anyway. What'd you think?
It was a fun movie. I mean, you're not going to get any kind of adult humor coming from Blue Sky. I think the only other movie I know is the first one. But yeah,
all the Ice Age movies.
Did they?
That's all Blue Sky.
Oh, wow.
That's why at the beginning they had that stupid raccoon guy going after the acorn.
Right.
Yeah.
It's okay. A squirrel.
It's a saber squirrel. Let's just work with that.
It's saber squirrel. The rare saber squirrel.
That save the environment undertone, which, you know, everyone should actually take under the wing, including myself.
I see what you did there.
You're welcome.
Yeah, like I said, we enjoyed that movie. Definitely recommend it. Obviously, if you've seen the previous movies, then get out and go. If you haven't, well, then go watch the first one and then go out and see this one. But there was a pretty awesome trailer. I almost slightly used profanity there. For How to Train Your Dragon 2, which I still reserve the right to say will be epic.
Yes.
But I think that's going to about do it for movies. And now after the movies, obviously, it's time for news.
So it's news time for April 23rd, or the week of April 23rd anyway. Leading off the news this week is a company that we've been talking about in previous segments. We've been leading up to this for the past few weeks. So our favorite TV company, Aereo, got their day in court yesterday, Tuesday, April 22nd. They appeared before the Supreme Court with various lawyers opposing them from the broadcast industry, kind of a conglomeration of various and a large number, really, of the broadcast giants. So they got their chance to present their case before the Supreme Court. The case, just a very quick recap, this is the company that created the miniature antennas that you can rent, so you can watch TV over the internet.
This is Aereo, by the way.
Yes. Aereo, yes. So the broadcast companies maintain that Aereo is stealing. It's a copyright issue. Aereo is countering that this is, you know, they're just renting an antenna that you could do yourself. They're just making it more convenient, and there's no copyright issue at all. So the notes and the brief from the Supreme Court case is available on their website. It's 67 pages.
Jeez.
Can we get the cliff notes, please?
I'm slowly working my way through it, but it's all in legalese, so, you know, it takes a little bit to digest. But unfortunately, it's one of those things that you don't get instant decisions from them, or maybe it's a good thing that we don't get instant decisions from them. The lines of questioning, the justices were very torn on what to do. At least it appears that they're torn from the way they were questioning Aereo. They don't fully agree with what they're doing, but they're also trying to balance, you know, future technology. They don't want to kill all online technologies, cloud services, all in one go. So it's.
Well, I mean, it's
but
one
of the justices did comment. Sorry, go ahead.
It's one thing to not agree with what they're doing, but the question is not do they agree, but the question is what they're doing wrong? You know, I mean,
well,
I may disagree with someone going to church, but that doesn't mean it's wrong.
Right. One of the justices' questions was along the lines that, well, it wasn't so much a question as a statement, really, that he felt that what Aereo was doing was exploiting loopholes in the copyright, the way the copyright was written, to get around it, you know, by having an antenna for every subscriber. And, you know, I tend to disagree. I don't think they're finding loopholes. They're working they're not working around, but working with the law. The law says you must do this, so they're doing it.
Yeah, and but because, you know, it takes away from the broadcasting, or like we talked about, it doesn't really take away from them. It just means people can get this as opposed to paying for a cable provider and, you know, whatever. Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what comes out of this.
If anyone, I don't see why the broadcasters are upset about this. Their shows are going to be viewed and their advertising is going to be viewed. If anybody should be mad about it, it should be the cable companies, because now I can get broadcast TV in really good quality and very easily, and I don't have to pay for a cable subscription.
Yeah, to me, that's the one who gets burned more.
So, but anyway, a decision is expected in a couple months, I believe it is. I think the date they gave was sometime in June. So we will follow this with ever-renewed interest.
Indeed, indeed we will. Well, I'm going to jump on here and continue on the internet TV viewing. Amazon Prime has partnered with HBO. So if you have an Amazon Prime account that you paid $99 a year for, you will now, or not now, but in late May, May 21st, you will be able to watch select HBO shows through Amazon streaming service. Shows like The Sopranos, Deadwood, 6 Feet Under. All shows that have been off the air for roughly 3 years And according to Amazon and HBO, it will not be their, quote, tentpole franchises. So Sex and the City is not going to be an option. Game of Thrones is not going to be an option. Entourage is not going to be an option. And they're even saying this, even if these shows become off air, or, for instance, season one of Game of Thrones is now 3 years old, that, for all intents and purposes, should fall into this category, but HBO is not allowing those types of series to potentially be into this. Now, maybe they'll change their mind in the future, but again, current shows that are airing now, shows like Veep and Girls and other current seasons or series, are not available. They will have to be 3 years old. And for those who are unaware, Amazon Prime not only allows you streaming of TV services that have been partnered with Amazon, but also gives free two-day shipping on many transactions and also access to their Kindle lending library. Now, what's kind of cool about this deal, though, is that this is now HBO's first online-only service. You don't have to be tied to a cable provider and a cable plan. You can have this Amazon Prime package and have some HBO viewing.
Do either of you guys have an Amazon Prime subscription?
Negative.
No.
We have HBO. We don't need HBO. We don't need Amazon Prime. No, I mean, I've thought about
it. Okay, but I'm not talking about the HBO portion of it. I mean, do you use Prime for anything else?
No, we don't have Prime. I've thought about it because we have been doing a lot more shopping on Amazon, and having a free two-day shipping would be good, and especially since they're one of our partners, it would be... I've kind of thought about, you know, supporting them too, myself, privately, but I just haven't made that switch yet.
Now, this is odd because this also comes out with the Amazon Fire, which is their TV box.
Yeah.
So it looks like they're trying to get in buddy-buddy with some bigger names.
Definitely. Yeah.
Everybody's got a TV box now.
It's like everyone seems to be making a...
Well, yeah, they've got that commercial with Gary Busey and how it's voice-activated, so you can search by telling it as opposed to selecting, so... But speaking of Amazon and Game of Thrones, I guess I can talk about this later, but I'll talk about it now, too. I ordered two 24-inch by 36-inch maps of Westeros and Essos that I plan to cut up and wrap them around artist canvas and post up on the wall. So it'll be a fun little project for the Game of Thrones fans.
I smell a thumbnail. Cool.
Yeah, we'll throw some pictures up on the Facebook page when it gets done. But anyway, Amazon and HBO are now confirmed in bed with each other.
Hmm. Well, speaking with ones who are doing some changing themselves, Capcom has, the game company, has purchased or spent $80 million in purchasing new buildings and staff for research and development. These two buildings are near their main office in Osaka, Japan. They state that they're trying to do this to find ways to make higher quality games at lower cost. So, I mean, that's a pretty big sum coming from Capcom or really any major game company to spend $80 million in purchasing land, buildings, and staff.
That's a big investment. I mean, like I said, any video game development company, that's a big investment.
I'd be interested to see what comes out of this endeavor. I mean, from what we've seen, we've basically been having the same repeated IP throughout the years from Capcom, and they've been basically saying that it's been because of their terms, the executive outsourcing of their products overseas, basically to the Western, aka US, developers. So they're blaming us.
Fantastic.
Great.
So, are either of you fans of Capcom games?
We've played some of the Mega Man games.
Yeah, I had a couple of the old Mega Man games. I don't know if that was back on... I'm guessing it was PS2-ish, maybe?
Quite possibly.
I don't know. Could have been early PS3. It's probably PS2.
They did Devil May Cry, not the most recent one, but
okay,
they did
the Devil May Cry
series, okay. Which I am a fan of, so I played those. How about you?
I don't recognize any of their games. I don't know that I've played any of them.
I think I don't know how much of the PC gaming they did. I think they were very long-time console-focused, so... But yeah, all the Mega Man games were Capcom,
DC.
And then they did, like, the Marvel vs. Capcom fighting games, which were kind of fun.
Oh, yeah, that was... Now they branched out, they've got, like, a whole series of Marvel vs., or, yeah, versus something.
Capcom versus somebody.
Capcom versus whatever. So.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll see what they come out with now that they've piled in the money.
Yep. It's a big investment. I hope it pays off, because I really do want to see what comes after. You know, what will they be pumping out? Hopefully some new IPs other than the same stuff they've been pouring out.
Sounds like that's the goal, so...
Just to put that expenditure in perspective, I just did a quick search and pulled up their wiki page, and the last year on file for them was 2010, and their net revenue... for all of 2010 was $23 million.
Ooh.
So they just spent four times their yearly revenue.
Yeah, but
on
that
R&D.
Was their reported, that was reported income in 2010. We're now in 2014, so they've been off the radar for 4 years.
Well, hopefully it's gone up some.
Yeah. So we'll see. Well, either way, they had to feel that the investment was worth it, so we'll see what happens.
Little fun note,
yeah.
They actually, in the currency of Japan, they spent million yen, which in rough average...
That has to be billions. 80 million U.S. cannot be 7 million yen.
Okay, so it's probably billion.
That's the other
thank
way
you
around,
for,
maybe.
Thank you for correcting me. Which roughly transfers out to 79 million. So, hopefully, this doesn't screw them over.
We will see.
All right. Do you guys remember a discussion several episodes ago where we discussed a company by the name of Nest and their new take on kind of boring devices? They came out with a new thermostat that was intelligent, very simple. It was just a dial interface. You set it to the temperature you wanted, and over time it learned to adjust, you know, the times of day, your home, and everything like that. And then they also came out with a new smart smoke detector.
Okay.
Because that's what we need.
Well, you know, the concept behind it was actually really good. And then they were bought by Google. And, you know, the typical... privacy groups were kind of scared by what Google might do with the data that they're now getting. You know, you've got devices in people's homes that are monitoring when they're home and what they're doing and what temperature they like things.
Oh no, the NSA is knowing what temperature I like my house at.
Well, I could see how the NSA knowing my temperature might be scared. No, actually, I can't.
Yeah, no. Psychological warfare, maybe? That's about it.
Well, okay, but it comes... to digress slightly, it comes down to, just because I wouldn't care, you know, just because it doesn't matter if they know doesn't mean I want them knowing.
Agreed.
But anyway, we digress. Digging into their terms of service, it turns out that they also have some side deals with the electric utility companies, where they're selling... the utility companies your anonymized usage data so that the utility companies know when to expect demand. And the catchy thing about it is that they've also that it can go both ways. You know, during a peak usage time, The utility companies can request that Nest reach into your thermostat and adjust when your air conditioner kicks in to balance the load on the grid.
So you could be home and you want it to be at 70 degrees and the grid says there's too much of a load, you're going to be at 80?
Well, probably not that drastic, but in theory. What I've heard is that it doesn't alter the temperature very much per se, as it may sequence the cycling of your air conditioner. So, you know, if there's 10 users on your street that all have Nest thermometers, rather than all of them turning their air conditioners on at one time, you know, and causing a huge inrush, because it's always the starting of electronic devices or electric devices that's the worst. It could sequence so that, you know, only two come on at a time.
Gotcha.
I mean, so I could see your, how that could yours and your neighbor start first, and then a few seconds later, the next one down starts. So I guess my point to this is, how do you feel about them sharing your usage data and using that to kind of control your environment?
If they're not infringing on my environment, per se, like my analogy earlier, if I want or maybe I need the temperature to be in a certain range and they're arbitrarily saying, no, this house is going to be hotter than its desired range or whatever, that I see a problem with. But when it comes down to balancing the load against the energy grid, I can see the value there. So, I mean, because some people have very unique situations that they do. Maybe someone in photography, I mean, with, say, photography, someone's got to have a dark room. I realize it's not thermostat related, but I'm sure there's plenty of people that do things at home that require very precise temperatures. Or if you have certain animals that might need, you know, they can't have it too warm or too cold. You know, you don't want someone else who doesn't know all the details manipulating the environment. But if the house stays the temperature I want it to be when I want it there, but it just changes when, like you said, the AC kicks on and off in relation to grid load, I see the benefit there.
Agreed.
So let me add a little twist here then.
Oh Lord, here we go.
You know how I like to play with this.
Yeah.
You need a drink?
Well, it makes for a good discussion. You got to admit that.
I don't disagree.
So these thermostats are not inexpensive.
True.
I haven't looked up the price recently, but I believe they're somewhere around the $200 or $250 mark.
Okay.
So
here's how bad it is, though. I don't even know what a standard thermostat goes for, so I don't know.
You can get basic ones for, you know, $30.
Okay.
You can get basic programmable ones for somewhere around the $100 mark. Or not basic, but more advanced programmable ones.
Okay.
So we're talking, you know, a fairly decent price up to this. So, but now they're also being paid by the utility companies for the data that they're collecting from us and our usage data. Do you feel that some of that should flow back to the consumer? You know, maybe the cost of the thermostat should be subsidized. Hey, if you want to maintain absolute privacy and not have us share, the thermostat's $250. However, if you're prepared to share your data, you know, the electric companies will pitch in, kind of like we do with cell phones now.
I guess my question is, if the electric company is then manipulating the activation of the AC unit or heater, depending, would you see a savings on your electric bill as a result from that, or not necessarily, and is there the benefit? And my other question is, can this truly be an isolated unit? Can you have a local Nest unit that doesn't transmit back to the Nest servers for data acquisition and have it, I guess, but then it's no different than any other programmable thermostat. So I guess what's the point? I don't know.
And then let's be honest, people do have varying ranges of privacy. Working in an airport, and you know, you could have people complaining that this body scanner goes too far into privacy, while other people will say, yeah, we need more security.
Yeah, it's all subjective, it's all relative. You
know, people value their different people value their privacy in different ways. How are you gonna put a standard to that?
Well, the standard is you either choose to buy it knowing the privacy risks and or benefit versus choosing to buy a different product, I guess. I mean, it's not like this is a global change to all thermostats. It's just the Nest.
Correct.
So.
But if the option was offered, would you take a subsidized one knowing that your data was being used? And that your thermostat could be manipulated to some degree.
Only if there were other added benefits. I would consider it if they're going to control when my systems come on and kind of moderate when my environment is going to change. If there's not an additional savings on top of that month to month in the form of electricity bill or utility bill reduction, then no, because I don't see the benefit.
Yeah, if I'm lightening the load, I should have something back.
Yeah.
Well, from what I've read on it, you don't get a direct benefit like, you know, a cheaper cost of electricity per unit. However, because it's a smart thermostat and learns your usage patterns and energy needs, supposedly it's able to cut your total energy usage over time. So you don't get cheaper electricity, but over time you end up using less of it.
But I mean, how different is that from another...
It may not keep the house as cool when there's nobody home. Not outrageously hot, but, you know, just raise the temperature a few degrees and save some electricity, and then kick it back down when somebody arrives home.
Agreed. But, I mean, how different is that from any other programmable deal? You just may have to spend a little bit more time programming one that doesn't automatically learn your...
Correct.
...on-offs. So, I mean...
That's not a unique benefit to Nest.
Yeah, exactly. That's not... I can get that benefit elsewhere. So, to answer your question, I probably wouldn't be interested in this device because there's no other benefit to it to me. The simplicity factor or the automation factor that it has built in...
Doesn't even interest you anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if there was other benefits that also came along with that, then great, but there's not. Yep. And then you've got the other side of the coin of, well, now other people know what's going on and can manipulate it without your necessarily consent.
The way I see it, it's the people who know how to do this and the people who don't. I mean, it's given a more easy example for people who would know how to program their AC. It's like someone who knows how to change the oil in their car. You know, if you know how to do it, you can do it yourself and you can save, how much, $150 probably?
Whatever, something like that.
You don't. You have to take your car over to a shop and they'll cost you for it. Well, you can set up your AC to come on and off at particular times. You don't need the Nest to do this.
Sure.
Yeah, so I guess that's where we stand. What about you? I mean, does this product appeal to you at all?
The simplicity factor of it did appeal to me. You know, the fact that you don't have to spend all the time programming it and tweaking it. It learns and adjusts by itself. But I was nervous when Google bought it because they're notorious for using data every which way they can. And I'm kind of leaning the same direction as you. You know, there's not a whole lot of benefit to the sale of my data. I'm not getting much back out of this. So I'm not sure I'm, you know, completely on board with it.
Yeah. I mean, if I want to sell my data, I'll call up the companies and I'll sell it to myself and I'll...
Ring NSA.
Yeah. I'll make the money. So...
The one thing I will give them, though, is... It is a very simple, very elegant interface. They've done a marvelous job with the engineering of it. It's really well done, and hopefully, moving forward, more companies will follow suit with, you know, easier to use, better looking devices.
Sure. Well, so. This brings me to a pretty interesting device that actually has direct human benefit. According to, let's see here, what's the hospital here? University of Michigan Kellogg Eye Center. They are the only facility who's performed now 4 surgeries after FDA approval to give people back their sight. This particular gentleman, the name...
Not their website.
No, their vision. This gentleman, Roger Ponce... was slowly losing his vision due to retinitis pigmentosa. He was diagnosed as a teenager. The disease eats away at the light receptors in the back of your retina. What the surgeries are now doing are implanting...
The surgeries are now doing or the surgeons?
What the surgery does, what the surgery accomplishes is that... They embed receptors in the retina, and then essentially the user wears medical-grade Google Glass, call it what it is, that has a video.
I feel like we've got another debate coming on, calling back to last week.
Pretty much. It has a camera in it, and then the glasses convert the camera signal into light pulses that wirelessly sends into the eye for these light receptors to pick up and then transfer into the optic nerve, giving people back some degree of sight. Roger has said that he's been able to pick out glimpses of his cat, his wife, and being able to just try to move back towards normality. There's only been 4 surgeries up to date. A 5th one is scheduled. But they're saying that not all of the people, which is roughly 100,000 that suffer from this disease, retinitis pigmentosa, have the ability to benefit from the what's being called the bionic eye. But an estimated 10,000 have low enough vision that, but still have enough receptors that they can make this work out for them. But of those 10,000, only about 7,500 are eligible for the surgery. So 7,500 people out of 100,000 could potentially regain sight, vision, with what is now being called the bionic eye. There's a really interesting company name here. I'm trying to see if I can find it back in this article. But what are you guys' thoughts on this? Instant reactions to the concept.
It's a very good first step. It's, you know, they said they can't solve everyone's eye problems, but it's a good step in the right direction in helping people.
I think the technology sounds really, really cool, but I have to ask the obvious question. Given our lengthy discussion of Google Glass, how do you guys feel about it in the context of a medical device?
If it's used to heal and it's not like Google Glass, search for nearest Korean barbecue. You know, it's I can let it go because the Glass is just right now it's just an expensive toy. Well, this is actually helping people and their vision problems.
And I understand this isn't Google Glass, but Garrett, like you said, you know, it's glass-like.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially glasses. It's dark frames, whether it's has the ability to see through them if you have, say, one good eye and one not so great. But then there's a camera built into it that is always pointing in the direction of your face and transmits the signal back to your eye and your optic nerve. How do I feel about it being a medical device? I'm not really sure how to answer that question without the quick caveat of saying I don't see how there's a problem with it, provided there's no ulterior motives. I mean, if it was Google, then yeah, they're projecting advertisements into someone's brain 24/7. That would be ridiculous. But
that would suck.
That's not what this is. And like you said, the technology is cool. We have the technology. We're making steps forward. The FDA has approved this for its usage. The company, it looks like, is Second Sight, which is
an appropriate name for what they're doing.
Totally applicable. It's pretty funny in what this article says, though, and I cracked up laughing. It says that the disease is the gradual loss of the light-sensitive retina cells that are called rods and cones. Patients experience loss of side vision and night vision, then central vision, which can result in near blindness. So wait, if you lose your side vision and your center vision, now you might be blind? Wait.
I can still see
thing. There's that thin ring between center vision and side vision.
Yeah, and there's top and bottom vision, I guess. You can see the sun in your face. You can see shadows.
I can still see the pavement I'm walking on.
Great. Way to go, guys. I don't know.
So I guess my only concern with this is I think as a medical device and as a sight replacement, I think this is an awesome idea. Like we talked about with our Google Glass discussion, though, and the pretentiousness of it, I'm kind of nervous now that, you know, these people are going through these operations that are necessary, and this wonderful device is restoring a measure of their vision, that the pretentiousness of the people that are, you know, the glass holes are going to make it almost dangerous for these people to wear this sight augmentation device where, you know, they need it to see, and you're going to get random strangers pulling it off their face and smashing it because they think it's, you know, Google Glass.
That's an interesting concern. Visually, it is very different than Google Glass, but
okay.
The concept of a wearable camera is why I made the correlation. But they are... In this case, the camera sits right above the nose support. There's large lenses over the eyes themselves because the eyes now either are not so sensitive or with the implants may be hypersensitive to light. So the eyes themselves are very shielded by a large black visor with the camera sitting dead center. So... Unless another company were to create a consumer-based model that would be similar, which I would envision would have copyright limitations because of the FDA medical factor, maybe, I would hope that that's not a concern of someone just walking up and, oh, those are cool, let me try them on, and now you've caused irreversible damage to the wearer.
Maybe they need to... release them with a big print across the front. Seeing as they're darkened lenses, just do a print across the front. This is not Google Glass.
Not?
I am not a glass hole.
Medical grade.
There you go.
Medical device.
Yeah.
Put a little green dot on it.
No, but I mean, definitely pretty cool. I mean, it just reminds me of an old TV show called Star Wars Tech that I'm sure you've probably watched 50 billion times. But it's all about, you know, the technology from Star Wars and how far are we away from that realm. And they figure we're only 10 or so years away from full articulating prosthetic hands. which is a pretty cool concept. Decoding the way the brain works and the signals that it would take to make it truly functional. It's pretty awesome.
You done?
I'm done.
All right. Well, I think that prosthetic eye would help him with our next topic. The Twitch is releasing, or is not, has just announced and released a beta version of the group chat feature. This is a feature that allows you to create a second chat in a channel where you can invite people to who you only want to talk to. So there is a main chat for the Twitch channel that you're watching that could be filled with darn near 2,000 people, and you only want to talk to 5. If you are a Turbo member of Twitch, I believe this is that you would actually have to pay Twitch a monthly subscription, you are able to open a private chat and then invite the people you would like to talk to on that chat, into that chat. Now, we believe this is a good thing because there are times where people who only want to talk to certain people will go to another Twitch channel, a smaller Twitch channel, and chat there. So they're watching the big channel, but then going to a smaller channel, chatting about the big channel on the smaller channel, and not having any kind of discussion on that smaller channel, where the discussion should be for that smaller channel.
So I guess I didn't realize that Twitch had paid subscriptions.
I didn't necessarily know that either.
I do know that one of the bigger YouTubers who also likes to do a lot of the StarCraft commentary, he actually does some of the tournament now. He does have a Twitch channel, and he does require that you pay. I think that revenue goes to him, but to pay to chat on his channel, he basically just means to keep the riffraff out. You know, people who would rather just post random pictures and stuff like that on the channel while it's going.
So perhaps we should clarify for listeners who don't know, Twitch is, and maybe you should correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm a little fuzzy on it too, Twitch is for watching people play games, right?
No, it's a live streaming service.
It's a live streaming, so not only
live
games.
Streaming.
I mean,
not always only games.
Could be video seminars, I would imagine.
It could be a virtual classroom if done right.
It could be, man. That's pretty much just the name of the game. Is a website based live streaming service. Now you can do the same thing with YouTube. YouTube has a live functionality, but Twitch is more dedicated to that. You're not going to have, to my understanding, you don't have stored videos on Twitch like you do YouTube.
Actually, I think you do.
Maybe they've gone to that then.
Okay. I think they've had it for quite a while. But yeah, it's a site-based service, and it's where a CEO of, I think, marketing stated that on an average day they have 700,000 unique chatters at any given time. So, I mean, that's a decent number. That's
pretty significant.
That's pretty nuts.
That's not an insignificant number of people.
I mean, that's not even when, like, PAX East, an event that was going on weekend before last weekend, where they were actually streaming that live. You may have saw that on our Facebook page. I posted that up.
But, yeah, I did see that.
Yep. So, you know, who knows how many people were on just that chat alone. So.
A lot.
Yeah.
I imagine.
So it's if you want to have a party or have a chat with, you know, hey, check this chat out, check this stream out, and then only talk with your friends on that thing and not have to deal with the, let's say, 1,200 other people, you can do that as long as you're a Turbo member of Twitch.
Pretty cool.
All right. While we're on the video game topic, the numbers for next-gen console sales have come out for the period ending in March. And shockingly, Sony is still outselling Microsoft.
That's not a shock.
No, not anymore. Yeah. Now we've gotten over that now. So far, Microsoft has announced that it has shipped 5 million Xbox Ones.
Okay.
Now it's very important to notice or to pay attention to the wording here. Microsoft has announced that it has shipped 5 million Xbox Ones. Meanwhile, Sony has announced that it has sold 7 million PS4s.
Well, now let's just take a step back, though. For the most part, when a manufacturer ships something, that means that someone has bought them at a wholesale price for sale at a retail level.
So correct.
Technically, Microsoft themselves have sold 5 million consoles wholesale. Whereas Sony has announced that they've sold 7 million plus retail. That correct. Could mean very much that there's 3 million Xboxes sitting on shelves somewhere that, from a retail standpoint, have not been sold. But from Microsoft's eyes, they don't own them anymore.
No, but it also depends on how the retail agreements, or sorry, the wholesale agreements are done. Some agreements are that if the retailer doesn't sell it, they can return it to the manufacturer for a refund.
This is true.
So yes, while technically it has left Microsoft's hands, if they don't sell at retail, there's a chance those consoles could come back.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
So, broken down just the month of March by itself, Microsoft sold 311,000 Xbox Ones in the U.S., while 370,000 PS4s were sold. So that's a discrepancy on Microsoft's part of 59,000.
It's a fair chunk for a month.
It is a fair chunk. Meanwhile, the also-ran, Nintendo sold 70,000 Wii U's.
They're right up there. So close. Wow.
Good try, Nintendo.
Maybe they should pull their head out of where it is right now and get back in the game. But I think that's going to wrap it up for us. We are just exceeding that hour marker.
Before a nice little note, the Game Boy was actually hit a milestone this week. Its anniversary, or the 25th anniversary, happened on the 21st of this month, this week. So it is now 25 years old since its first release as the little gray box.
Pretty cool.
So,
you know, they did have some good successes.
They did. We still have a few Game Boy Colors floating around.
We used to have the originals.
The originals, yeah. Well, yep. Like I said, that's going to do it for us. An abundance of not for April 23rd. We'll catch you next time.
Keep on gaming.
That's a wrap.
We here at Abundance of Not do appreciate you listening in and would also appreciate you sharing us with your friends via the Stitcher Radio app and also iTunes. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and join us at Facebook. Thank you.